Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. On this weekend show, we're going to start off first half of the show looking at some of the recent economic data and even potential news out of China when they all return from their golden week, as well as talk a little bit about the markets, S&P over 5,800, and look ahead to next week with a key central bank meeting. On the back half of the show, we're then going to switch over more to the resource space and talk about the investing environment around critical minerals. It's going to be a good show for all of you and all of us recording it. Always fun to bring on some of our thought leaders to get their recaps of what happened in this last week and look ahead to the weeks and months ahead. To kick off this show, we are chatting with Mark Chandler, managing partner at Bannockburn Global Forex, also editor of the Mark to Market website. Mark, we usually feature you on our special Sunday editorials to recap economic data and look ahead to the next week. I wanted to feature you on this weekend show because, well, we had some important inflation data out of the U.S. We also had Fed minutes, and we had some rumblings in China when they came back from their golden week. So let's start off with the inflation data. We had PPI and CPI released this week, broadly in line to a little bit higher than expectations. We really seem to have, at least in my eyes, seen a leveling off of inflation here above the Fed's target rate. It's not skyrocketing, but also that downward trend seems to have moderated, if not stopped. So, Mark, what was your takeaway from the inflation data this week?
Yeah, I think that we saw that the headline rose about 0.2%, slightly more than expected. But if we're going to get 2%, guess what we need is these 1 to 2% a month readings, more than 1%, 0.1% reading. But I think what bothered people was that the core rate picked up. That is, the year-over-year rate went to 3.3% from 3.2%, while the headline rate still fell. We made a new low for the move down to 2.4%, but the core rate, 3.3%, slightly higher than expected, a little bit higher than in August. And this is, for me, this is really, like I was saying before, like part of the 1-2 punch. Stronger than expected U.S. jobs data last Friday, the 4th. And then this week, a bit firmer than expected CPI, PPI. This is what's really has been a real key driver, not so much to the equity market per se, but to the other parts of the capital markets. And what I'm thinking there is the higher U.S. interest rates and steeper U.S. yield curve and generally stronger U.S. dollar. So higher rates, I think, in the U.S. My own guess here is that we're exaggerating what's going on a little bit. And I think that's really the takeaway from some of the Fed official comments. It seems to me that the market, which had been leaning towards 75 basis point cuts here in Q4 before the jobs data, had to readjust. It was really a question of market positioning. But the Federal Reserve, I thought, took it pretty much in stride. We've seen several officials speak since the FOMC meeting. We had those FOMC minutes. And I think that the takeaway there is that the greater disagreement, the greater discussion, debate about whether the Fed was going to go 25 or 50. And ultimately, I think it's Powell's role as chair that really drove the decision to do 50 basis points. And remember, we talked about this last week as well. It looked like somebody, probably Powell, planted a story in the media to help prepare the markets for a 50 basis point cut when the CPI that had triggered the move took place during the quiet period when the Fed isn't supposed to be talking to the press ahead of the meetings. So bottom line here is I think that the CPI on the heels of the jobs data made the market pull back and think again and converge again with the Federal Reserve as far as rate cuts this year. The median dots in September pointed to 0.25-point cuts. And I think that's really where the market is. The market's just below there now. And I think that's where we're sort of settling at.
Yeah, Mark, I think that's what's really important from all this economic data is what is the central bank policy going to be? How is the Fed going to react? And there has been a lot of Fed heads out, you know, discussing maybe different angles. Some even said that they were fine if we only did one more 25 basis point hike. And just a couple of weeks ago, the market was still pricing in the potential for a 50 basis point hike at one of the next two meetings. So now it's gone from a 50 to 25 to possibly two 25s or maybe just one 25. And it brings up the larger question of this market has also been pricing in rate cuts all through next year, pretty much. And it's the same thing we saw in previous years where they were looking forward to this year, expecting seven cuts, and we've so far only gotten one. So what does it mean if inflation stays stickier, if the jobs continue to trend the way they have? Could that derail the market expectations for this series of rate hikes? And may the Fed just take their time and not be in a hurry, keep some bullets in the chamber?
Yes, I suppose the Fed could be patient. That's what they've signaled. I'm not so sure if I'd say that the seven rate cuts, but to me, it's a moving picture. It's like a video streaming and taking one part of it and making a snapshot. I'm not sure if that's a fair reflection of what the market really thought, though it was at that one point in time, it did have those big cuts in. But I think that the market really agrees with what Powell has said, and that is that inflation's decline this year is more important than last year, because it's broader, that is, it's covering more sectors. But I think you're right. I think that, I think we might have talked about this a bit last week too, that the debate has been between a soft landing and a hard landing. And this one number, non-farm payrolls last month, so that'd be for September, has made the market renew this like speculation that maybe we have no landing. But right now, when I look at the Fed funds futures, I see about 150 basis points of cuts priced in, which is more or less what the Fed had in their dot plot. And the reason that people look for lower rates, even if you think that the economy is not going to have much of a landing, but we could stay around these types of levels, is that the level of policy, when it was set at 5.5%, it was meant to address an overheating economy. Even if the economy stabilizes at these levels, it doesn't seem to be overheating like it was. So the level of restrictions is not needed. When inflation is at 7% and you raise the Fed funds rate to 5.5%, that's one thing. But inflation is well below there now. So the real rate, naive sense of a real rate, you just subtract CPI from the nominal interest rate. And that gives you a proxy for a real rate. And real rates are high. And so I think what the Fed wants to do is, if the Fed, I think, is committed to trying to engineer extending the soft landing that we're having, and to do so requires lower interest rates. So I think that the two cuts for the remainder of this year still seems to me to be the odds-on favorite. But the market's got 45 basis points out of possible 50, say, priced in, and that gives us another 100 for next year. I think that seems to be reasonable based on our current information set. But I think you're right, too, Chad, that not only does the market not get it right, the policymakers don't get it right. The economists don't get it right. The economy is perhaps as difficult as trying to forecast the weather, an unstable, nonlinear system. And so I think that we always have to make these attempts. And even though we should be humble in that, I think we have to like think about what the future is going to be, even if we don't know and even if we're often wrong.
Mark, because so much focus is on the jobs market and inflation, look, the jobs market has been weakening, but the last report was fairly strong. That's going to be revised a few times, so who knows where that comes in. But on the inflation front, there's a lot of people out there saying that the inflation fight is not won. We're not down to that 2% level. A lot of people are saying that inflation could spike back up, and so many different factors play into inflation, whether it's central bank money printing, monetary policy, also trade and the flow of goods, as well as labor costs. So many things play into this. Where do you see the risk of inflation picking back up to the upside?
Yeah, so inflation picking back up to the upside. So first, I want to say that if we take the last 3 months of inflation and annualize it, so it's about 2.4%, which speaks to exactly what you're saying, that we're not quite at the inflation target yet. And so where could inflation come from? A new, stronger surge in economic activity could boost it. I think that what a lot of us are looking at is thinking about the correlation between oil prices and the 10-year break-even. So the 10-year break-even, remember, is sort of the inflation expectation derived from subtracting the nominal yield from the 10-year tips. And that break-even, it tends to be correlated with the price of oil. So as oil prices have gone up, fueling inflation expectations. And so I think that why is oil going up? I think there's two big stories, well, three big stories, I think, for it. One is, of course, the widening conflict in the Middle East and the potential for Israel to retaliate, perhaps hitting Iranian energy capacity, oil, or the refiners. Secondly, China has given us a big stimulus package. We'll find out more on the 12th, but the large stimulus package, it might be worth, some people think, a 0.5% to GDP, maybe a full percentage point to GDP. Some of that would be this year. And so that would be boosting demand from the world's second biggest economy. And the third source, I think, is just here in the US, where the Fed's 50 basis point rate cut has helped sort of underpin what people expect to be stronger demand. So I think these three factors, which say nothing really about inflation or general economic activity, but I think that's really the point, is higher oil prices could be one of those shocks for inflation. In my understanding, the Fed sees higher oil prices as a tax on consumers. And what that means is the more it takes to heat up your house or to fill your car with gasoline, the less you have on discretionary spending. And so higher price of oil has tended to be, we tend to get an oil shock before we get the economic downturn. And that's why I'm watching oil carefully. We're still firm here near $75 for the November WTI. I think we go above 80, and then I think it'll get people more concerned about this energy shock again.
Yeah, Mark, you don't want to see those higher energy prices because it's not just a tax on citizens and consumers. It's a tax on businesses too. It makes freight more, shipping anything around the world becomes more, manufacturing becomes more, and a lot of products use petroleum in their end products. So it's definitely not great for keeping prices low. But the other factor you brought up there was the China factor. They've been very vocal coming out of Golden Week with, and even before that, honestly, with what their initiatives were going to be to help boost their real estate markets. And they've been doing a lot of easing, but not really calling it easing on a monetary level. And I think people want to see more fiscal involvement. What is the government going to do? And there is a big address coming up really over the weekend. What do you make of some of the policies from China and how global markets are reacting in what's been a really dicey week in the Chinese markets?
Yeah, China is so interesting, huh? I mean, what I find most interesting, I think, is that when observers look at China, I think that we see it, China through a lens of their ideology, and I think that confuses the situation. Listen to what the Chinese premier said earlier this week. He was quoted on the news wires, vowing to, quote, "listen to the voice of the markets when setting policy." Does that sound like a communist, or does that sound like a capitalist? I kind of think it sounds like what policymakers in the US or Western Europe or Japan or Australia or Canada themselves might have said at some point. And so I think that what's happened is that there's a huge rally in Chinese stocks spurred by that stimulus package at the end of September. When the Chinese markets opened up again from taking that week holiday celebrating the National Foundation, the CSI 300 rose 6% on October 8th. And this was the 10th consecutive daily rally for the CSI 300. Over that 10-day run, 35% rally. So in the past recession, it's fallen 9%. So people say, oh, this is the lack of confidence. I think it's partly lack of confidence, but it's also partly just pure profit taking. Stock market goes up 35% in 10 days and then falls 9. So I'm not so sure that this is the end of the story. I think you're right that China very well could announce more fiscal measures over the weekend. That's why I mentioned that there's some talk of as much as 2 trillion RMB, some of around $240, $250 billion. I think you're right. I think that people want to see fiscal policy being used. And this would be the idea is that monetary policy is really more of a supply side function. While fiscal policy would be more of a demand on, it would create, it would help foster demand, which many critics think is a missing link in China's story.
So how does this China policy filter through to markets, especially US markets or even commodities? Because we do see China really moving the market for commodities on a regular basis.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that would be a real litmus test for it. I'd be watching iron ore prices for the steel. I'd be watching copper and aluminum, but also I'd be watching in the oil because China is the world's biggest importer of oil. But yeah, I think commodities is part of the story. If you're optimistic on what China is doing, rather than buying Chinese stocks, you'd buy the commodities. In the foreign exchange market, the Australian dollar is sort of regarded as almost a proxy, a G10 proxy for China. The Aussie is closing well this week. It's closing near its highs. And I think that the China story is part of the reason it's helped it recover.
Well, Mark, let's dive into the currencies a little bit more. You're kind of our resident currency expert. So, what are you seeing as far as trends in the dollar? Also, you had mentioned some interesting comments off mic about the Canadian dollar kind of tracking the oil price movement and even the big central bank meeting over in Europe. So, let's get a review of the currencies.
Yeah, sure. So I think that the story really begins in August. Dollar began selling off, lasted through most of September. We've been really bouncing more or less since late September, early October. But this past week, some of the major currencies tested important levels. 109 in the euro. In sterling, we got close to 130. In the Aussie, we got close to 67 cents. In the Canadian dollar, we've approached 138. And these levels so far are holding. And I think it's mostly corrective in nature, helped, of course, by the higher U.S. interest rates, which helped fuel this correction. But I was looking for the correction before we got the higher interest rates, just because of how far the dollar had fallen. I was looking at the 112 level in the euro. The euro had traded a couple of times. And I was looking at the two-year interest rate differential, which the U.S. pays a big premium over Germany, but that premium had been falling. And I find it's not so much a one-for-one level of the premium to the euro, but really the direction that interest rate differential is moving. And I saw that interest rate differential beginning to move back in the dollar's favor. And so I felt confident that 112 area was going to more or less hold. But now, with the euro has fallen 3 cents from its high, a little bit more than 3 cents, that the interest rate differential is beginning to narrow again. And so I suspect that if we haven't bottomed yet in the euro at 109, we've come pretty close to it. Sterling's an amazing currency too. It's really been the strongest currency of the year in the G10. But we held that 130 level. We need to get above 131, 131.20 to really confirm that it bottoms in place. And of course, as you mentioned, the Canadian dollar has really been like out of favor. But so far out of favor, I want to say that the Canadian dollar, the pressure on the Canadian dollar has been relentless. And by relentless, I mean that the Canadian dollar has sold off now. This is today, Friday the 11th, is the eighth consecutive down day for the Canadian dollar. And today, we had Canada reported a much, very strong, I should say, jobs report. On the headline, they created 112,000 full-time positions. And the unemployment rate unexpectedly fell to 6.5%. But the Canadian dollar hasn't got much traction, and its losses were extended. And so what drives the Canadian dollar? Usually I see the Canadian dollar being a proxy for risk. So I see it being correlated with the S&P 500. Sometimes I see a broad U.S. dollar move. So the correlation is sometimes greater with the dollar index. But in the past couple of weeks, past month or so, really, that correlation is broken down. So it tells me that breakdown of correlations with these other factors just suggests to me that there's something idiosyncratic about Canada right now. And two things come to mind in the politics that sort of sums it up in one word. Both the Canada's politics, where the Canadian minority government might not last another month if they don't pass reforms that the Bloc Québécois want. Otherwise, they'll support the Conservatives' no confidence vote. On the other hand, and in the U.S., we're less than a month away from our election. And as people study the Trump's tariff proposals and they try to work through who has helped and who has hurt, Canada, the countries that are closest to the U.S., and I don't mean geographically, though that's true as well, but really in trade ties, get hurt the most. That'd be Mexico and Canada. And so I think that these political factors, in addition to the idea that Canada might be the next G10 central bank to cut rates 50 basis points. The Fed has cut 50. New Zealand this week cut 50 basis points. And Bank of Canada Governor Macklem had suggested they could accelerate their cuts. And it's really a question, really, I think now. The employment data would say that they don't need to cut rates by 50 basis points, at least on the headline type numbers, the decline in unemployment rate. But next week, next Tuesday, the 15th, Canada reports the CPI, and that'll be the key. The headline looks like it's going to soften below 2%. But for the Bank of Canada, the core rate, the underlying core rates are more important, and those look a bit sticky.
Okay. Thanks for that recap there, Mark. Look, we're in this trend of central banks cutting rates, and now it just continues to be, I guess, that debate of 25 basis points or 50 basis points, and the Fed, I guess, trying to push off some of those expectations. But look, we're in a rate cutting cycle here. Let's quickly recap the markets this week, because look, all the averages were up this week. The S&P, as we're recording this, is over 5,800. The NASDAQ was up this week. Russell was also up, but that broadly still lagging, I guess, the NASDAQ. Overall, what do you think is causing this continued strength in U.S. markets when we're in a seasonal time when usually markets are weak? We have the VIX that is still remaining in the 20s, which is generally elevated for where it has been for the earlier this year. What's driving the continued strength in U.S. markets?
Well, yeah, it's interesting. How could we have record highs still in the U.S.? But at least in the past week, I don't know if the U.S. has really outperformed. Give me a sense of this. Is the NASDAQ is up about 1%. Canada is up about 1.25%. Germany, which has had a horrible factory orders report, though a better industrial output report, up 1.3%. Italy is up over 2%. The Nikkei is up 2.5%. So to me, this is more or less a global rally, a global phenomenon. And what's driving, I think, is, like you say, we know the direction of travel. Central banks are cutting rates. And in fact, something I just shared, hinted at before, and that's that the European Central Bank, the ECB, is likely to cut rates as well next week. But what's interesting there is they cut rates in September. People didn't have a strong chance of a back-to-back cut. But then the Eurozone reported the CPI fell below 2%. So we talk about the U.S. not reaching its 2% inflation target yet. The ECB is there. I suspect that we'll get the Bank of Canada there next week as well. And of course, China's been there for a long time. Japan's a little bit above there. The UK has tested that area. So the US is, in some ways, the higher inflation out of the say, G5 or so. But I think you're right. Global equities, I think, like the idea of lower interest rates and what looks like a soft landing.
All right, Mark, always great chatting with you. Thank you again for taking us through recapping the data this week and looking ahead to what we all should be watching and what the markets will be moving on in the next week. Look, Mark Chandler, managing partner at Bannockburn Global Forex, also editor of the Mark to Market website. Click that link in the show notes to follow along with Mark's pretty much daily commentary on key data and market moves. Mark, it's great having you on the show. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend.
Thank you. Good luck to everybody.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin and Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.